All right, so we are up to Shoftim, chapter 12, paragraph Beis. And just to quickly remind ourselves where we are holding, our Shofik is Yiftach. Yiftach, after dealing with some family difficulties, was called up to lead the Jewish people, lead the army, appointed leader, and successfully led the Jewish people to victory over the nation of Ammon, and then again got caught up in some other family difficulties, this time with his daughter, and the parak begins with a little exchange with the people of Ephraim, Yud Beis. Again, Yiftach was from Gilad, he was from Shevet Menashe, and Ephraim and Menashe, brothers, neighbors, so the parak begins, Vayitzoik Ish Ephraim, and the people of Ephraim cried out, actually, or gathered, I think it means here, Vayavar Tafona, and they crossed to the north, Vayomru LeYiftach, and they said to Yiftach, Madua Avarta LeHilachim Divnei Ammon, why did you pass on, cross the Yarden, to battle against the Bnei Ammon, Vilvanu Lo Karasa LeHechasima, and you didn't call to us, you didn't invite us to go with you. We're really mad at you. And therefore, Beitcha Nisrof Alecha Be'esh, we're going to burn your house down with you inside.
Whoa.
Vayomer Yiftach Aleihem, and Yiftach said to them, Ish Riv Hayisi Ani Ve'ami Uvnei Amon Me'od. I was embattled with the people of Bnei Amon, in battle, I guess, my nation with the people of Bnei Amon, very much. Va'ezak Eschem, and I called to you, I tried to gather you in. Lo shatem osi mi yadam, and you did not redeem me from their hands. When did this happen? So there were 18 years where Bnei Amon was causing the people of Gilad to suffer, oppressing them, and we the people of Gilad tried to ask for help from you, the Bnei Ephraim, and you were unresponsive. And then he continues, Va'ere Ki'encha Moshia, and I saw that you weren't going to save us. You weren't going to help us. Va'asima nafsi b'chapi, and I placed my soul in my palm. I put it all on the line on my own. Va'ebra el b'nei Amon, and I crossed to the b'nei Amon. Va'itnei Hashem b'yadi, and Hashem gave them into my hand. V'lama alisem elai hayom hazeh, and why have you come up this day with Yivachem be? Why have you come up this day to fight against me? So this idea of simply understood, we might say, I took it into my own hands, he was saying. The Mitzvah David says that it's a muscle for something that that you're holding in your palm, that it can fall very easily. And that's what Yiftach was saying. I put my own life in the palm of my hand. I put myself at risk of falling, of dying, of death. And I went forward with this, and you didn't come to help me. And then he said, Yiftach continues, and he says, and Hashem gave them into my hand. And so, if I would have lost the battle, so then I could hear that, you know, you would have a claim against me that you should have invited us to fight with you. Look, and, you know, you've lost because of it, and I guess, you know, our borders are weakened, and we've all suffered as a result. So then it makes sense that you should come with a claim against me. Why didn't I invite you to join me for battle? But Hashem gave them into my hand. So, what are you complaining about? He may be saying also, yeah, it doesn't seem like they, you know, they were like, so, you know, so from, they had these motives, they wanted to be part of a mitzvah. They wanted to be part of, I don't know, they wanted to show their prowess, their strength. So, what's that? They wanted to lose, right? Good point. I can give you this in a second, I just need it for one thing, another, you know. So there's 2 points that Yiftach's making. It could be understood in two ways.
Why did these people?
Why they want to fight with him?
Why fight with him? Yeah.
They wanted. They, you know, they felt like it was insulting that you didn't call on us. We're strong.
What is that? They're from the same. They're from Bnei Yisrael, right?
Yeah. Okay, there are a lot. There's lots of civil. I mean, it's about to get even worse. So that the fact that they complained is the worst, least of our problems. So, but he was telling them either, look, I was successful, so what are you claiming? Or he was saying, Vayitnim Hashem biyadi. Hashem gave them into my hand. So obviously Hashem was happy with this arrangement that I would go without you. And why are you making a claim against me? Now, what we're going to see in the next psukim is that this turns into somewhat of a civil war. Or at least a massacre. So it's interesting when we compare this to something that we had earlier on. Because if we go back a few prakim to Gidon, so the same thing happened with Gidon. The same people, the Bnei Ephraim, came to Gidon, and they said, this is back in Parak Ches, and they said, Ma davar hazeh asisa lanu levilti kros lanu. What have you done to us, not inviting us? Kielasa livachim ben Midyan. That you went and fought against Midyan, by Yerivon, Ito b'chazaka, and they argued very hard with him. This is back in chapter 8 in Parak Ches. And this is Gidon, and again the Bnei Ephraim complaining that you didn't join us. And his response was, Gidon's was a response of praise. That you guys are just way better than me, and it's, the truth is that there they joined the battle at the end, and they were the ones who killed off, who hunted down the leaders and killed them. So he basically, you know, flattered them and said, no, like, it's, you know, you're even better than me. He didn't like argue back, and it, you know, the argument just waned, dissolved, and was, you know, went away. And here, Yiftach, unlike Gidon, he makes an argument out of it, and he says, you know, I didn't call you because I did try to call you, and you didn't come, and it turns into a bit of a battle, and a massacre, really, and the idea the Mitzvah wants to learn from here is that. You know, you have to, you know, you may be right, but you have to make every effort to just make shalom, to make peace. And sometimes, just being right isn't enough, and you're expected to make shalom. And we're going to see that Yiftach ends up, the people of Gilad, the people of Manasseh end up killing many people from Bnei Ephraim, and Yiftach is going to suffer a gruesome death, according to Chazal, as a punishment for that.
So he started the fight, basically, Yiftach.
I mean, they challenged him, and they challenged, why didn't you invite us? And instead of just, like, you know, as Gidon had done, flattering them or, you know, trying to get out of it, he argued back. And then we'll see what happens next.
Yeah.
What? I don't know. I'm not sure. But that's true. It's true. So, okay. So we'll see, though, that, maybe, yeah, I mean, that may have worked, right? You know? The Pasuk Dalet, Vayikbot Yiftach es kol anshei Gilad. And Yiftach gathered all the people of Gilad. Vayilachem es Ephraim. And they went to war against Ephraim. Vayaku anshei Gilad es Ephraim. And the men of Gilad struck Ephraim. Ki Amru, because they said, Pelite Ephraim. Now, exactly how to, according to the Trop, it should read like this. Ki Amru, because they said, Pelite Ephraim Atem, you are the Pelite Ephraim, you are the escapees of Ephraim, you're the those who flee, so the, you know, Pleita, the people, it's like people who escaped, Polak.
They were living in the
midst of
Ephraim.
We refer to survivors of the Holocaust, the She'iris HaPleita, and we refer to Vayavo HaPalit Og, when Og leads the war of the four and five kings, he's the HaPalit, the one who escaped. So Pleite Ephraim Atem, you are the, okay, we'll have to see exactly what it means, but that's what it literally means. Gilad b'soch Ephraim b'soch Menashe, Gilad within Ephraim and within Menashe. Now, there's three different ways to break up this pasuk and to interpret it. What exactly is going on here? So Rashi, and it's based on the Targum, Rashi understands that the breakup of the pasuk is ki amru plite Ephraim, because the plite Ephraim said, Atem Gilad b'soch Ephraim b'soch Menashe. You are Gilad within Ephraim within Menashe, meaning that plite Ephraim here would refer to the lowliest, the low lives of the people of Ephraim were insulting the people of Gilad, and they were saying, you are nothing, b'soch Ephraim, b'soch Menashe. Of all the people of Ephraim and all the people of Menashe, you, the Giladites, who again are from Menashe, you guys are nothing, you're low life. And so
there you go. I mean, that's infuriating language.
Sure. Yeah. So,
yeah.
So that's how Rashi and the Targum interpreted that it was the Plite Ephraim, the low lives of Ephraim, who were insulting Gilad and saying, you're Atem, you are nothing, you're Atem Gilad, you're B'soch Ephraim, you're B'soch Menashe, you're like, of all the people of Ephraim and Menashe, you are the lowest. Others learn, the Sadeh learns this way, that you read the Pasuk, Ki Amru, because they said, the people of Ephraim said to the people of Gilad, Plite Ephraim Atem. You are like the lowliest of Ephraim. You, even the best of the Bnei Gilad, are like the Plite Ephraim. You're like the worst of us. Your best are like the worst of us. And again, insulting them directly. The Malbim learned here that they were saying as follows. We know Ephraim and half of Menashe had portions in Eretz Yisrael, right? Because all the tribes took portions in Eretz Yisrael except for Reuven, Gad, and half of Menashe. So those took outside of Eretz Yisrael. Took Me'aver Yarden. So you have half of Menashe on the other side of the Jordan, and you have half of Menashe in Eretz Yisrael. And then all of Ephraim is in Eretz Yisrael. So the people of Ephraim were telling the Bnei Gilad, the Bnei Gilad were on the other side of the Jordan. They're on the wrong side. So they were saying, you, Gilad, that took from Eber HaYarden, that took from the other side of the Jordan, Plitim Atem, you're like escapees, you're fleers, you fled the Shevet, you abandoned the rest of the tribe. Because you should have been B'soch Ephraim or B'soch Menashe. You should have been amongst Ephraim and amongst Menashe. But you went...
Deserters.
Yeah. Because you should have, right, you should have crossed with us. And their challenge, what they didn't like, was that the leader of at least Ephraim and Manasseh, and seemingly all of Israel, was from them, was from Gilead. And the Malbim reads the Pasuk, Ki Amru, they said, Plite Ephraim Atem, you have deserted. Meaning you're deserters of Ephraim. Ephraim is the main part of the Shevet. You are Plitim of Ephraim. You are deserters of Ephraim and the other half of Manasseh. And you should have been Atem Gilad, you Gilad are deserters. And you should have been Besoch Ephraim, Besoch Manasseh. You should have stayed close within Ephraim and within Manasseh and Eretz Yisrael. And how could you choose, how could the leader of Ephraim and Manasseh and all of Israel come from Aver Ayarding, from those who deserted and remained on the other side of the Jordan? So either way, they are deserting. Vayilkot Gilad is Mabros Hayarding with Ephraim. And Gilad sealed off, fortified the crossings of the Jordan against Ephraim in order to not let Ephraim cross the Jordan. V'haya ki yomru plite Ephraim evora, and it would be when the plite of Ephraim would say, let us pass. V'yomru lo anshe Gilad, and the people of Gilad would say, ha efrasi ata, are you from Ephraim? V'yomru lo, and he would lie and he would say no. So here, by the way, pretty clear, the Radak points this out, that the Plite Ephraim refers to the people of Ephraim, because I mean, unless somebody could come up with another way to read this verse, but we just said that that the Plite Ephraim could either refer to the Pusim Shev Ephraim, the lowliest of the Ephraim were saying to the people of Gilad, or it could be what the people of Ephraim were calling the people of Gilad. And the Radak says, it seems from this pasuk, that it actually refers to the people of Ephraim. And it's not the term that the people of Ephraim were using to insult the people of Gilad. What's that? Why are they trying to cross the Jordan? Good question. So
it was a strategic military move, in a way?
So the Radak actually says that again, going with the understanding that Plite Ephraim means the lowly people of Ephraim, meaning the farmers, the cattle herders, and as we know, the other side of the Jordan was, why was it that Reuven, Gad, and half of Manasseh wanted to stay
fertile land
for they had sheep, and it was good for herding their sheep, or whatever you do with sheep. Shepherding their sheep and so grazing their sheep. Thank you. So the Radak says that's why they wanted to. They had need to cross the Jordan to bring their animals.
This statement here says these are the shepherds who had to cross the Jordan.
Excellent.
To graze their cattle.
Beautiful. So that's the Radak.
From Rashi.
That they wanted to. They were the lowly ones. They were the shepherds and they needed to graze their sheep across the Jordan. That's why they wanted to cross. Now.
Weren't they just escaping from the battle that had just been fought and lost?
Which battle was that?
It was warred against the fire.
Oh. Now you welcome us to Ephraim.
No, but they were escaping from the battle. The fire lost. They're fleeing. They're trying to get back home, so they're trying to cross the Jordan.
You mean they're trying to go back home across?
Doesn't matter which direction.
Okay, I think that works. I think Mitzvah David has that approach. Mitzvah David says that who are these Plite, what is Plite Ephraim? Why are they called the escapees of Ephraim? Right, they're escaping. Those who remained who hadn't been... Let me find this Mitzvah David, just to read it inside. Do. Yeah, he offers either the Bnei Ephraim HaNisharim Ninacharim. The Bnei Ephraim who had not been killed yet were trying, right, to escape, either to get back home. Well, as Mr. Sapper is saying, it's not clear which way they were trying to cross. It could be they were already in Gilad and trying to get back home. Now, another interesting shot that Mr. Sapper says is that why are they called Pusei Ephraim? Again, it would mean here the Pusin, the lowly one, and meaning the Chashuvim, those who were of stature, they knew who they were. And they didn't need to be told twice that guy was from Ephraim and, you know, kill him. But the people they didn't recognize, the Pusei Ephraim, the Pusim, that's who they needed to test them to see who they were, where they were from.
We're in Pasuk 6 now, right?
We're about to start Pasuk Vav, the Sapper's favorite Pasuk in all of Tanakh. So let's get to it. Vayomru lo, and they said to him, they would say to him, a person trying to cross the Yarden, Emar na shibolet. Say the word shibolet. Vayomer, and he said, shibolet. And he would say, shibolet. He had a lisp or whatever, and he couldn't pronounce the shin. Right, the lo yachin ledaber came. He wasn't able to pronounce it, let's say. We'll interpret that in a number of different ways. We'll interpret it in a couple of different ways. Vayochazu oso, and they seized him, vayishchatuhu, and they slaughtered him, al mabaro tayarding, to the, by the crossings of the yarding. Vayipol ba'isahim Ephraim arboim ushnayim oles, and 42,000 people from Ephraim fell at that time. So, simply understood, why did they choose the word shiboleth? Rashi says, Shiboleth hanar hazeh evar. I think shiboleth could mean a crossing, or I'm not sure actually, but
let me see what it says here.
A what?
It's a sheaf.
A sheaf?
A sheaf.
What's a sheaf?
Of
grain?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so but Rashi says here, shiboleth hanahar hazeh evor. The shiboleth of this river I will cross. So I think it has another meaning.
They wanted to check their pronunciation.
Yes,
It could have been anywhere.
They used the shin.
Yeah, no, right. It could have been, but they chose this word because they were at this crossing, and it has to do with the word crossing. Why couldn't they pronounce it? The Radak says perhaps it was the air of their land that caused them to be unable to pronounce the word shin. And he gives an example, I believe. He says,
he was the prime, since they rushed to say it. Immediately they were not able to say.
Yeah, so just like the people of France who don't know how to read a shin and read it as a soft tuck, same idea, so too the people of Ephraim cannot pronounce it. That's what the Red Doctor said. What did they do when they said Shema? That's an interesting question. I was wondering the same. So, it's possible, if we go with the explanation here of the Ben Yoyada, that, I think it's the Ben Yoyada, that we will have, sorry, no, it's the, if we go with the Chida here, the Chida says that he brings a Tosfos in Maseches Megillah. So the Gemara there is discussing someone who, I believe, he couldn't pronounce Ches, and he pronounced it Hey. So, and the problem there was when he read the Pasuk, I don't have the Gemara in front of me, and he doesn't quote the whole Gemara, but I think the pasuk there says, there's a pasuk that says, V'chikisi es b'nei Yisrael. Hashem says, and I will wait for b'nei Yisrael. But if you don't pronounce it as a ches, and you pronounce it as a hey, then it reads, V'chikisi es b'nei Yisrael, and I will strike b'nei Yisrael, which is a very big difference. So, now, so Tosfos there wonders, this person, I think it was referring to, he says Rabbi, so I guess the Gemara was referring to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. I'm not sure. I didn't see the Gemara inside. I meant to look it up, I forgot. So he says, though, if he couldn't, Tosfos asks, if he couldn't say a ches, how could he have davened from the Amud? How could he have led the congregation? And if it's referring to Rabbi, I guess we know that he did. How could he represent the congregation if he can't pronounce a ches? So Tosfos says that no, he really was able to pronounce a ches. If he would concentrate and carefully do it, then he would be able to sound it out. But it didn't come easily. That's what Tosfos says about that Gemara, that Rebbe. So the Chiddush says could be the same thing with the Bnei Ephraim.
So why would that entitle him to daven for the Amud if he could say it but it just doesn't bother him?
No, I think the point was when he would daven from the Amud, then he would concentrate and say. I don't have the background. I forgot to look up the Gemara. But it's out of context. Actually, I was just counting on you to be able to know the Gemara and be able to tell me what it said.
Yeah, there's still a little more about an ayin. And it says you're not allowed to daven from the Amud, but you can't pronounce an ayin.
Right. So I guess it could be that we know that Rebbe did. It's talking about Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi. Fine. So the Chiddush wants to take that idea and suggest maybe that's the same thing here with the Bnei Ephraim. That if they would concentrate, then they were able to properly pronounce Shiboleth. However, and that's how they could say Shema. However, that's true. However, the people of Gilead would pressure them, say it right now, without waiting. And if you look at the pasuk, he says, it's Meduya. So look at the pasuk. Actually, no. This point is not. But so they would tell them to say it right away, and right away without concentrating, they would say Sibolet.
Yeah.
And it says the Lo Yachin Ladaber King. So right, the classic interpretation is that the word Yachin comes from the word Nachon, meaning proper. They couldn't say it properly. The Chiddush says it could come from the word Hachana, prepare. Meaning, below Yachin Ladaber came, they weren't able to prepare to say it that way, and therefore they said Shibboleth. Either way, they're saying it incorrectly, but they were capable of pronouncing it, but they would pressure them, say it right now, and you know, if they were delay, I guess they would be in trouble also. If you have to concentrate and really try to get it out, that wouldn't count either. But because the Lo Yachin Ladaber came, because they weren't able to prepare to say it, so therefore they would say the Bolin.
Right.
Now, I'll share with you a fascinating idea about why this came about, that they couldn't pronounce it. From a Sefer Tiferet Tzvi, I'm not going to start quoted. I don't know who wrote the Sefer, and it's very creative, but why was it that the people of Ephraim were not able to pronounce the Shin? The Radak said it was in the air. That's, you know, the avir of where they live, the air, the environment caused them to be unable to pronounce it.
Like other countries in the world, they have certain pronunciations they can't make no matter what they try. The Japanese can't say the R, is it, I think? R or the L, one of those two.
Yeah, I mean, we
can't do it.
Thing, you know,
can't do it.
There are many pronunciations. We can't do certain pronunciations.
Right.
The Tiferet Tzvi suggests that they intentionally train themselves to say a sin or a samas in place of a shin.
Ah.
Why? Because when Yaakov Avinu gave the brachos to Ephraim and Menashe, so we know Menashe was the Bechar, he was the elder of the two sons, and so he should have gotten the right hand, and Ephraim was the younger son, right? And he should have gotten the left hand. And we know that Yaakov switched his hand. So the pasuk says, Kikel es yadav, ki Menashe ha-Bechar. He... Tikel es yadav, whatever that means, that's what he did to his hand. Tikel es yadav, because Menashe was the Bechar. So, the way, what Tikel means, the way Rashi, I think, explains it, and others, is it comes from the word like haskel, like calculated. It was, the point was that this was intentional. He calculated, he purposefully did this to his hand, and switched them. Because really Menashe was the Bechor, and Menashe should have gotten the left hand, so if the right hand, so if he didn't, then if he got the, if Menashe got the left hand, then this must have been intentional. One second. Yeah, we'll relay it. So,
wait a minute, Ephraim was the chosen of the two, right?
Yeah.
He was the younger. He was the younger.
Huh?
He was the younger, though.
Right, and it's similar to what happened with Yaakov himself, as opposed to his brother.
Right.
Because yeah, Yaakov was the chosen one,
so,
and
right.
So Sikel es yadav means it was purposeful, it was calculated. And that's actually how that's the proper reading. Now, if one were to pronounce, to read the word with a shin instead of a sin, it would be Sikel es yadav, which he says is related to the word of, even though it switches some of the order,
there was a discussion of the two words. Radak suggested there was a sample of the words used to test the pronunciation. Claims that they were told to confess and admit that idolatry rotted past from the law. However, they admitted it that... I'm not quite sure of the explanation here.
So, there's no vowels here, but he says,
it says shibulat.
Okay, yeah, that's a different thing. So he says that the word shikel can be from the word hashlacha, which is not with the ches, it's with the chaf still. No, but I guess there's a word still hashlacha. Basically, what he says is, and I'm not familiar with all the words here, that could mean more like that it was random. That if it was, if you read it as shikel with a shin, then it could be interpreted more as like uncalculated. And then the pasuk would read that he just put his hands out, and it was wrong because really Menashe was the Bechor. And that's if you would read it with a shin. So the Bnei Ephraim didn't want anybody making a mistake here, and it was supposed to say Sikel because it was purposeful. Yaakov purposefully put his right hand on the head of Ephraim. They didn't want anybody to make any mistake about that and insult their kavod of being the chosen of the two, the Bechor of the two sons, the chosen son of Yaakov to be the Bechor. Again, the sons of Yosef, but chosen by Yaakov to get the right hand. They didn't want anybody to make any mistake, and so they stopped reading any shins as shins, and read all shins as sins or samas. And that way there will be no mistaking that it's supposed to say Sikel and that Ephraim was the purposefully chosen by Yaakov to get the right hand. And that's why they trained themselves to do that purposefully. Very, very creative. But
nevertheless,
brotherly love.
The fix is in.
Yeah, no, so that's depending on, this is the Tarsiba, the Chida read it as, the Chida read Yachin as from the word Hachanav, to prepare, But classically, it's read as Nafon. I think
no matter what you do,
the Mitsudos read it as correct. Let's see. Well, Yafin Pasuk Vav.
Nafon.
Zot the Roman was having. Rumiwashin Achana. MS Nafon and Dabar. So actually, the Sion reads it differently. He reads it as right to get it right, but not necessarily from the word nafon. Okay, I'm not sure.
You know, you look at this as an absolute thing.
I'm familiar with the. We've discussed it.
You see that? It's always Hashem's hand that's guiding everything. No matter what we think we are able to do. God says, no. This is mine, not yours.
That's right. All right. So moving right along. Pasuk Zayin. Vayishpot Yiftach es Yisrael sheish shanim. In Yiftach judged Israel for 6 years. Vayamas Yiftach ha-Giladi. And Yiftach the Giladite passed on. Vayikaver be'ari Gilad. And he was buried in the cities of Gilad. Now, what does that mean? What does it mean that he was buried in the cities of Gilad? Usually someone is only buried in one place and not in multiple cities.
Oh, he's dismembered?
So, some say, no, it just means in one of the cities. In the cities, he was buried in one of the cities of Gilad. However, right, in the five towns, exactly. However, the Tzidasavir and the Ralbag, they learn that, no, they took his bones and they buried them in different cities in order to remind everyone that he had saved them from the Bnei Ammon, that there would be a little burial of Gilad, of Yiftach, in each city. You know, you could go to everybody could see his kever, you know, all the time. Now,
is that Midrash?
That is Pshat. That's the Ralbag and the Mitzvah of it. The Midrash says that he actually suffered shchin, boil, and his limbs began to fall off while he was still alive.
Oh.
And when I don't know why he was still traveling, but he would leave as he traveled.
Part of him would fall off and it'd be buried.
And it would be buried in the city where it fell. And Hazal tell us that this was a onesh. He was being punished for killing his daughter. So again, Hazal understand that he actually sacrificed his daughter. And his punishment was, as I mentioned earlier, a gruesome death, that his limbs fell off one by one. There's actually a discussion in Halacha based on this, whether you have to bury a person's limbs if the person is still alive. There's an obligation to do kumura. But let's say you have an amputation. You have to bury the limb. So there are those who want to bring a proof from here that you do, because they buried his different limbs as they fell off. And others argue, I don't know the whole technical argument, but some want to bring a proof from this medrash that you do.
What about burying, whether it's at the time of death or whatever, different parts of him were buried in different places. Is there...
You have to bury everything in one place.
Yeah, I would think maybe everything should be buried together.
I would think it's preferable, but I'm not sure. Maybe see from here that it's permitted to do other ones.
Rabbi Axelrod's brother had an amputation at one point. So that limb was buried prior to his passing.
Right.
Eventually, as he passed, I guess the two of them were joined together. And
so it could be that they went with it. But those opinions that say that you have to.
In the casket with him, I guess.
Okay. Pasuk Ches. Vayishbot Achar Abbas Yisrael Ivtsang Mi Beis Lachem. And after Yiftach, the person who judged them was Ivtsang from Beis Lachem. Vayihivo Shloshim Banim Shloshim Banim. And he had 30 sons and 30 daughters. 30 sons Ushloshim bano shilach hafutza, and 30 daughters he sent out, he married them off. Ushloshim bano teidi levanam yachut, and he brought in 30 daughters, meaning he married off his 30 sons to 30 girls. Vayishbat es Yisrael sheva shanim, and he judged Israel for 7 years. Vayamas Ibsung, vayikavir b'beis lachem, and Ibsung passed away, and he was buried in Beis Lachem. Now it seems like a random bit of trivia that he had 30 sons and 30 daughters and married them off. And so on a simple level, it's trying to show that he had a lot of bracha, and that therefore we can understand that he was a successful, he was a good person, he was sad with his bracha. That's on the most basic shot level why it's telling us that. Now the Gemara in Baba Basra, the Gemara in Baba Basra tells us something fascinating. The Gemara says, Ibsan de Boaz. Ibsan was Boaz. Who's Boaz? We know Boaz from the book of Ruth. And
I gotta get going.
Go ahead. Have a good day.
All right, yeah. Have a good one. I'll see you Monday night. You're gonna be here, right?
Yeah, tomorrow night.
I'll bring my book, my Kindle with me.
So, why is it that, where did Chazal get this from, that Ibsan was Boaz? So, the Rabag says that it's pretty clear if you read the book of Ruth that Boaz was a shofik. Very, it's implied there. And we know he was from Beis Lachem. And we have a whole, and we know he lived in this time period. And we have a whole book of shoftim listing off all the shoftim, and he's never mentioned. And we only find one shofet from Beis Lachem that's listed. And therefore, Chazal knew that Ibsung and Boaz were the same person. Now, the Gemara and Baba Basra there tells us about these daughters and sons that he said. The Gemara says that he made 120 seudos for them, meaning he made 60 weddings, right? 60 children, 60 weddings, 60 erusins, engagements, and then 60 nisuins, 60 weddings, 120 seudos. And he didn't invite Manoah to a single one of them. Who is Manoah? Manoah, we're about to meet in the next parak, is the father of Shimshon. Ibsan, Boaz did not invite Manoah to any of the suudos. And the Gemara says he was punished, that all of his children died in his lifetime. And then, I guess, we understand that after that, he married Ruth and created a new line from her. But before marrying Ruth, he had 60 children. They all died in his lifetime because he didn't invite Manoah to the suudos.
Were they friendly? I mean, why should he have invited Manoah?
I don't know. Now, yeah, I'm not sure. So, question that we have to address is, apparently there's an expectation that he should have invited him. We know Boaz was a great tzaddik, so why didn't he invite him? So the Gemara actually says, all of the suudos he did not invite Manoah. Omar, because he said, Kudna Akra Bimai Paroi. A barren mule. How is he going to pay me back? Simply understood, he's not going to make a chasana. He has no children, Manoah. So he's not going to be able to invite me to his chasana. To his child's chasana. So why should I invite him? That's at the most basic level. And he's punished that all of them died. The Marsha, with who Boaz was. So the Marsha, was bothered by this. How could it be? How could it be that a chassid, a foursome, someone we know to be a tzaddik like Boaz, how could it be that he would say such a thing and that he wouldn't invite Manoah? What's going on here? So he suggests that we know that tzaddikim, they don't want to be nana, they don't want to benefit from others. Now, the way that it worked, the Gemara in Baba Basra discusses a very interesting custom that they had in the day, in at least in the time of the Gemara, and Marshal's assuming even earlier, which was the idea of shushbinus, which means shushbinus, which means in the context of that Gemara that if I invite you to a wedding and you bring me a present, then I'm expected to bring you a present when you invite me to a wedding. And not just expected, but you can bring me to basting if I don't give you a present. That's what the Gemara discusses. It's a fee of, it's an obligation in basting to pay back wedding presents. And I guess that way, you know, it ensured that the chassan and kala had what they needed. I'm not sure if that was the purpose of it, but that was the, it's choshing mishpat. You had a right to bring someone to basting to claim it from them. So Boaz, so Manoah wouldn't have come without giving Boaz a present, and Boaz didn't want to benefit from that without having an opportunity to pay it back, and he knew that Manoah had no children, and so, right, 60 presents, right? And he knew Manoah didn't have any children, that he wouldn't be able to repay Manoah, and therefore he didn't want to, he didn't want to benefit from Manoah without being able to give him back. And he says, what did he mean? My parali, what's he going to pay me? He meant, here's a little bit of a stretch, the my parali, klomar, my parali atta, what's he going to pay me now since I can't pay him back? I'm not so sure how he's interpreting that line. But that was the idea. He didn't want to benefit from someone without paying him back. What? So the Chidah sort of mentions an idea in his own approach, which will answer that as well. The Chidah says that... Not the Chidah, the Ben Yoyada. The Ben Yoyada says that he was afraid of embarrassing Boaz. That Boaz would say, oh, I'm just a barren mule who doesn't have any children. If he would be invited to this wedding, it would like make him feel bad. That's what Boaz was concerned with, hurting Manoah's feelings by inviting him. The Chidah says, however, he was wrong. Sorry, not the Chidah. The Ben Yoyada says, however, he was wrong. And even though he had good kavana, but that's not what happened. Manoah was hurt by it, that he wasn't invited, and therefore Boaz was still punished very severely according to his madrega. And exactly. So according to the madrega, he got a very severe punishment, and that's also in the Marshal. We could say the same thing. Even though he had the proper kavana, he had good intentions, but, you know, at the end of the day, he hurt Manoah's feelings, it was damaging to him, and therefore he was still punished for it.